China's parliament rubber stamps a hugely controversial national security bill to limit freedoms in Hong Kong. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Out of nearly 3,000 parliamentary delegates, only one voted against the national security proposal today. If passed into law later this summer, Beijing could set up intelligence agencies in Hong Kong for the first time. Rachel Cartland, formerly a Hong Kong civil servant, says while residents there are upset by today's move, they're more worried about the implications of a warning from U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who said the National People's Congress decision would signal the city is no longer autonomous from Beijing.
They could take sanctions against individuals, make travel to and from the U.S. more difficult, impose tariffs. There's really a lot of potential to do a lot of harm to our status as a global trading and financial services hub.
How likely do you think that is, that the U.S. will take those actions?
It's so hard to know when anything is likely once President Trump is involved. What I do know is that American businesses, both in the U.S. itself and in Hong Kong, began a lobbying effort to try and get any action diluted. Demo Sisto, the young activists who've been at the forefront of the campaigns against the Hong Kong government, have come out with a press conference just now saying, in effect, okay, this is tragic, this is sad what the Americans are doing, but it is necessary. And they're still counting on Beijing to acknowledge its fault, as it were, and go into reverse. But I'd have to say that seems rather unlikely.
Hong Kong has long been known for the ease of doing business, and there's been a lot of chatter as the protests have gone on for the last year or so that businesses could move out of the city to places like Singapore. But how likely is that? Because moving a business out of a city isn't easy, and you know, businesses like HSBC, for example, depend massively on business in China.
Indeed. And to date, we've been quite reliant on exactly that, this sort of conservatism that says, number one, it's too difficult. Number two, Hong Kong has got a fantastic position with all its China links, China knowledge, rule of law, freedom of speech, English proficiency, all these things. But unfortunately, as time goes by, it becomes more and more likely that people will actually begin not to see the positives and to think of packing up and going.
Rachel Cartland, thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Well, after that vote today, Hong Kong's Hang Seng fell as much as 2.2%, but recovered some of those losses to end the session down 0.7%. European shares, meanwhile, are seeing another day of broad gains. The Stock 600 is up more than 1%. Travel and leisure shares are again leading. Here in the UK, 70 hospitality bosses have signed a letter urging the government here to scrap a mandatory 14-day quarantine for international travelers. Nissan reported its first annual loss in more than a decade today as the coronavirus pandemic continues to eat away at car industry demand. But shares popped more than 8% in Tokyo after the company also announced a four-year cost savings plan to combat declining profits. As the BBC's Guy Hedgeco reports, one prong of that strategy is a decision to shut down the company's factory in Barcelona.
The plant is the company's biggest in mainland Europe, but it had been operating well below capacity, and its future had been in question for some months. However, the Spanish government has insisted that shutting the factory down will be more costly than keeping it open. Labour unions have said they will form a human chain around the building as a protest later today. Spain is now starting to emerge from a strict lockdown, which has been in place since mid-March. But many industries have already been hard hit by the coronavirus crisis, and these lost jobs will add to an unemployment rate that is rising fast.
That's the BBC's Guy Hedgeco reporting from Spain. To Venezuela now, where after five tankers carrying oil arrived from Iran and other nations this week, President Nicolas Maduro said for the first time residents will be charged to fill up their gas tanks. The BBC's Luis Fajardo explains how that's hitting pocketbooks of those already living through not just an economic crisis, but now also a global health crisis.
Venezuelans have already had to deal with what they consider a national humiliation of having to queue up for fuel for hours, even though their country has the biggest oil reserves in the world. There's been a lot of concern in the Venezuelan government to try to increase the price of fuel, because in the past that has led to major civil unrest. So they're clearly concerned about doing that in a situation where, of course, the Venezuelan government is going through the whole crisis of the pandemic and increased hardship for everyone.
Do we know how much gas prices could rise?
They have not indicated the exact amount. The price right now is almost symbolic. People, they often pay attendance at petrol station, sometimes even with candy, because it is so incredibly cheap. So any kind of increase is going to be substantial for Venezuelans, particularly since they're going through this extensive economic crisis for a couple of years.
Venezuela, as you alluded to, used to produce as much as 1.3 million barrels a day of oil and have the world's largest reserves. But the industry is now in ruins, and that's why the government has just accepted 5 tankers worth of oil from Iran. Why is it in this situation?
It depends on who you talk to. The government insists that it has been the target of an economic warfare effort by the United States. The opposition in Venezuela, of course, will tell a very different story. They will argue the Venezuelan government has completely mismanaged the Venezuelan oil infrastructure. The refineries are only operating at a very small fraction of their capacity. The Venezuelan government has had to look abroad to import refined oil, to import fuel. However, in the last months, this has become even more complicated because of U.S. sanctions, hence the deal with Iran. And that is why it was so important for the Venezuelan government, that Iran was able to provide this fuel to Venezuela. So even though the Venezuelan government presented it as an act of solidarity by Iran, the opposition claims it is instead a very good deal for the Iranians, who get Venezuelan gold for this.
A complicated situation there. The BBC's Luis Fajardo, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And here in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.